This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Slap shot. Gloved again by Hellebuck. But he couldn't. Perel the rebound. They score. Eric Stoll with the putback on the scramble in front. Andrew Kopp's going to have a breakaway at center ice. He'll march in. Andrew Kopp, second time on Price. Shoots and it's stopped by Price. No, they score.
Into the middle of the ice. Slows it down. Scores. Blake Wheeler, thanks for coming.
Slap shot, they score. Charlie McAvoy with a slap shot, deflected in front by Jake DeBrusk. It's 5-4.
The four-game road trip ends with a record of 2-1-1. Five out of a possible 8 points. Yet the Jets have to be thinking what could have been very close to it being a 6 or a 7 or even an 8-point road trip. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this frigid Saturday morning alongside Dave Minuk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates will apply. We want to hear from you what's on your mind on this Saturday morning regarding the Winnipeg Jets. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets, it's got the latest Manitoba Moose, it's got the latest news and audio from both of those teams. That's available at illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good to see you. Hope you're staying warm. Happy Saturday to you both.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I just want to start off by talking about that NASA sweatshirt. I mean, I said it right before we came on air. That thing is just beautiful. I love it.
For the people who didn't know
that you were so into, you know, the aerospace world.
Well, we've been trying to send Drew to outer space for quite some time, so maybe this is the first time.
I honestly didn't, for those who aren't in studio, which is, you know, everybody that's listening, I'm wearing a sweatshirt that says NASA on it. My wife bought it for me. She also bought one for herself and for the kids. And it's a warm hoodie. And
it's a really nice hoodie, and it's got the American flag top left.
I really didn't expect that this was going to be a topic of conversation to start the program. I just grabbed a hoodie out of my closet. I mean, I could be Dave Minuk wearing his toque. Hang on, are you wearing the sweats with the hole in it, or are you wearing pants today?
Wearing some jeans today.
Some jeans there. You're dressed up for the occasion. Ezzy's wearing his Illegal Curve polo shirt. Anybody else? Any other fashion?
I just needed to point it out because it's the type of sweatshirt that it just begs you to ask about it. I've never seen you wear it.
I honestly think I got it about a month ago. It's not. It just grabbed it out of my closet this morning.
Maybe you should take it as a compliment that Ezzy pays attention to your wardrobe.
Maybe, you know. Do you want some advice on clothing? Is that what you're looking for now?
I could use all the advice I can get on my wardrobe because I've basically got like 4 or 5 shirts, a couple of pairs of pants, maybe 3 or 4 pairs of socks, and I just rotate those things Monday to Sunday, and hopefully I have enough like clean clothes just to get myself through the week.
Not to get too deep into this topic, but I was looking, you know, I came back from Kentucky after the winter break and everything, and I was looking for like a whole bunch of t-shirts, and maybe they're in the wash, maybe I left them in my suitcase. I left basically my entire wardrobe in Kentucky. I forgot to pack.
Really? Oh no.
I forgot to pack, you know, in the hullabaloo of packing up the kids and everything else, and I just forgot to pack almost half a dozen t-shirts and like 3 sweaters.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something, Drew. As most Winnipeggers can tell you.
Yeah.
You're not going to need t-shirts for a while.
That's fair enough. I won't need the t-shirts. It was just so unlike me to forget to, you know, to pack half a drawer. Let's get talking about the Winnipeg Jets now. It was a 2-1-1 road trip, as we mentioned. Totally off topic to start the show. We're off to a rousing start. You know, 5 out of 8 points, which is good. You know, better than average, but the Jets have to come back after that game in Boston and just say, you know, what could have been. So many
I'll just stop you there for a second there, Drew, because, you know, the game against Minnesota, you could also say that, right?
What could have been on the road trip, I mean.
And on the other side of the coin, you could say, well, what if Toronto gets the other point in overtime or the shootout, right? But, you know, when you talk about 5 of 8 points, I realize, you know, a lot of talk going into the Boston game was travel, even though it's only an hour and a half flight, you know, from Toronto to Boston. It's not a long flight, but the point is, you know, the guys get in, the team gets in early in the morning, and it's the fact that, you know, 3 in the morning, I think it was, right, Dave? So you're talking about 3 games in 4 days. So it doesn't matter what team you are. That's a tough stretch, especially when you're going up against Toronto and Boston. Yes, Montreal is a complete mess, and I thought that, you know, the game between the Jets and the Habs, that was the best, I think, complete game that the Jets played. Like, from start to finish, I thought that, you know, the Jets were in control of that game. And the Canadians are getting a little bit healthier with Brendan Gallagher, but, you know, they're a mess right now. I mean, they have fallen out of the playoff picture. But yeah, when you talk about the games between Toronto and Boston, we know that, you know, just, what, a week and a half ago, Toronto came into Winnipeg and spanked the Jets.
Yeah.
And we know that Boston is one of the best teams in the league. So when you consider that you get two of 4 points there, and you had a chance to get 3 of 4 points, that's the big thing. But, you know,
that's what I'm saying about the Boston game, though, and the Minnesota game last Saturday. I mean, that game, you know, we know how it ends in overtime with all the controversy and what should have been goaltender interference and is not called goaltender interference, and, you know, the Wheeler penalty that preceded that and everything else.
It was a penalty, though.
Fine, but I'm saying there were other instances that weren't called. But
they missed the Ehlers, they missed the Morrissey, for sure. They missed calls out.
Right. I'm just saying,
which is funny because to that point in the game, I actually thought in the first two periods the refs had done a fairly admirable job. They were trying to get things right. They were, you know, checking replay to make sure this guy stick. This is the guy who's in the. So I actually thought they had done a good job. Mm-hmm. But in typical kind of NHL fashion, they don't want to alter the game, so they put the whistles away for the end.
And then they alter the game.
And I just don't think you want a game to end like that, right? Like, there was a gray area there. I'm talking about the Wild game. When you're talking about, you know, the goalie interference, or the call on the ice was there was no goalie right. interference, right? So you just don't like to see a game end that way. Like, we talked about this, you know, last April, last May in the playoffs. You just don't want games to have to end on a non-call.
In a cloud of controversy.
Or a mistake that was made by a referee. But absolutely, Drew, I mean, the Jets could have easily got 6 or 7 or maybe even 8 points. Like, when you're talking about the Montreal game, that was the only game that wasn't a one-goal game.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you're talking about, you know, this was a successful road trip. Like, before the road trip, I was, you know, kind of thinking to myself, if the Jets can get 5 or 6 points, this is a successful road trip. So you don't get the extra point. And yes, you could use those extra points because you're, what, 3 points behind Colorado right now? Two or three, I think, behind Colorado. So you can use
3 behind Colorado. Right.
There you go. Yeah. So you can use every single point right now, mm-hmm. and you're not going to dwell on that because you've got Nashville coming up tomorrow, and then, you know, you've got Tampa Bay and Vancouver. So, I mean, you have to move ahead. But I think when you look at the road trip as a whole, because the Jets were not playing their best hockey going into that game against Minnesota. I mean, you forget that, you know, December wasn't the best month.
No.
You know, the Jets have basically been, you know, a 500 team since early December, right? So I think when you get points in 3 of 4 games and you easily could have got 1 or 2 more points, I think that is something you can build off of.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that you're, to your point, as the reality is that you're sitting there looking at that Boston game, sorry, to Drew's point, and you're saying, yeah, 2 goals in 33 seconds in the third period is really what sunk the ship. And mm-hmm. and the funny thing with Boston, as good as they've been at home, they've actually lost quite a bit in overtime and shootouts. They were going into that game, they were 14-2-9. So if you could have gotten that game to extra time, there's a pretty good chance you were going to come out with 2 points, not one. So there's no question you left points on the board there. I mean, you're thinking to yourself,
you have multiple 1-goal leads against a very good Boston Bruins team,
yeah.
and that's where the disappointment comes into play. Not, you know, 5 out of 8 is pretty good. But you're flying home from that game and you're saying, you know, it was within our grasp to earn 1 more point. It might have been within our grasp, to your point, Dave. If you get it into overtime, you're pretty good in an overtime mm-hmm. situation. It was within our grasp to maybe get 2 points. And all of a sudden, 7 out of 8 when you're playing against the Boston, you're playing against the Torontos, looks way better than 5 out of 8.
I mean, again, ultimately, to Ezzie's point, if you have those extra 2 points in the bank, that puts you at 54. Which puts you 7 ahead of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've played 2 more games in Nashville, and it puts you 1 behind Colorado. So from the Jets' perspective, you're sitting there going, of course, that's something that you're going to have to look at. And Andrew Kopp spoke to that after the game and talked about how, you know, that's going to leave a little bit of a bitter taste because they knew that game was within their grasp.
Mm-hmm.
But again, ultimately, what you have to do is you have to just forget about it. You have to have a short memory and you have to turn your attention to a Nashville team that, you know, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10. Obviously, they have a new head coach. And so you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, this is going to be a tough test because of how important these games are. And Nashville and Winnipeg generally have these like kind of tight battles. But what I'm saying is, yeah, ultimately you have to have a short memory. You have to say, okay, that sucks that we left those points on the board because mm-hmm. there's no question about it. There were like at minimum 1 point left on the board. And to my mind, I mean, again, you know, the Minnesota one was sufficiently.
Yeah, once the game goes to overtime, it's a bit of a toss up. You can't say that the Jets were going to win that game in overtime.
That's right. So you can't make that you know, but I'm just saying, so you're sitting there going, okay, well, that was a reasonable one for the Jets at least to, you know, and you're feeling good going into that game because even though you basically had third period leads on all these teams, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, that is something to kind of hang your hat on is the fact that even though you ultimately look, Toronto tied it up late.
Yeah.
You know, on you know, a whatever goal. I mean, the Jets weren't happy with it because
the lack of a hooking call there.
They felt Lowry got hooked by Tavares, I think.
Marner, and,
Was it Marner or Tavares?
Doesn't matter. One of the Leafs' big guns.
So and they felt that he had been hooked and prevented him from getting the puck out. But the fact is that you still get the points. You still walk out of Toronto, as to Ezzie's point, a team that spanked you the week before. Montreal spanked you the week before. You beat them. So even though they're in a terrible, I think they're 1-8-1 in their last 10. So yeah. Montreal's not doing particularly well. But, you know, you still leave this road trip, and the Jets have been very good on the road, right? So now you come home and you're thinking to yourself, okay, you need to have a very good homestand.
You know, and you make the good point about the points, right? Like the fact that you could use every single point you can get right now. But if you look at, you know, the difference between, like, Dallas is in second place in the Western Conference now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
When did that happen? Well, it happened because they won six games in a row, right? Like, a couple of weeks ago, the Jets were...
Also happened because the Pacific Division is its typical middling division.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in aside from, you know, Arizona and Vegas, it looks like nobody really wants to take control of third, right? You've got Edmonton and Calgary, Vancouver. But the point here is that when you're looking at the standings, I think you can take solace in the fact that, you know, the Jets have been in a playoff spot for the majority of the season. I mean, not necessarily, you know, comfortably as of late, but, you know, you can take solace in the fact that you have the ability to put together two wins, three wins, four wins, and you have the ability to stay in the fight, as they like to say. But there really isn't a big separation aside from St. Louis, who's pulled away a little bit. It's not like they have first place, you know, in the Central completely locked up. But I think we'd all agree.
In my books, they do. They have a 7-point lead over Dallas right now.
I'll give you that. I'm just saying it's not like a Tampa Bay situation last year where they're 20 points ahead of everybody, right?
Fair.
So I think the Jets know that they have the ability here with six games left right before the break. You know, they've got the homestand. It's not the toughest homestand. I mean, it's not like you've got a three games, you know, in 4 days situation, right? But you've got some good teams. Tampa Bay's playing really good hockey. Nashville, obviously, new head coach John Hines, they're coming off of a big win, right? Pecorine scored the goal. So, I mean, it's not going to be an easy homestand, but you know that you can put these wins together, and you know that it's not like things are getting out of control and all these teams are way ahead of you. Because when you talk about Dallas and Colorado, we're talking about, you know, you put together three or four wins and you're going to be able to get right back in it.
Dallas is now 4 points up on the Jets and they've won six games in a row. So they're obviously going to come down to earth a little bit sooner rather than later. And to your point, Ezzie, the Jets are still playing sort of that average hockey record wise. I mean, middling hockey. If they're able to ever string together multiple wins in a row, which we really haven't, we've sort of seen them take, you know, one step forward, one step back, one step forward, one step back, particularly since the end of November after they had that great streak in November.
Well, it doesn't hurt that you've had Andrew Kopp hurt. So the fact is, and then if you look at how the Jets have gone since he's been out of the lineup, that plays, in my mind, a pretty big role. So I think now that you have Andrew Kopp back and healthy, pumped him up to the second line now. You know,
They dropped him and Roslovic.
So, I mean, I think Andrew Kopp's going to have a big impact on this lineup. We've been talking about it all season. You've got to be getting contributions. Mason Appleton obviously got his first goal, a shorthanded goal. That's important for him.
I love that goal.
Yeah, and I absolutely. It was a really nice goal. I mean, you know, you're playing aggressive. You see an opportunity against a guy like John Tavares. You know, again, I thought it was a really nice play by Appleton, fighting off the check, still managing to score. So, and important, just to give him some confidence, right? Because, you know, it's hard when you don't have a goal all season, and obviously we know how his season's gone, missing the games after the Heritage Classic. But, like, you need contributions throughout the lineup because you can't just ride your top six and your goaltender and hope and pray, which is kind of what's going on.
Which is what they've done for a lot of the season so far.
But what I'm saying is if you can maintain some health, then maybe we'll see something a little bit different. We'll see a team that resembles the Winnipeg Jets when they were back in November.
Speaking of health, they're getting healthier on the defense. Only Nathan Beaulieu is out of the lineup. Dmitry Kulikov returned on Thursday. Sammy Niku was made a healthy scratch. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets defense. We'll talk about the defensive pairings. Who should be the regular top six now with Kulikov back, with Niku up from the Moose? We talk about the Jets defense when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Pretty good, considering all the things that you said. You know, five hits,
you know, just, you know, going, getting back out there and, you know, getting up to the game speed. Sometimes it's challenging, but, you know, it just seemed like the guys made it easier. You know, I was able to, you know, read plays and anticipate plays because of our team play today.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Dmitry Kulikov speaking with our own Brian Munns after Thursday night's game in Boston. He returns to the Jets lineup, I guess, a little bit ahead of schedule. It was supposed to be out till the All-Star break.
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, so he gets back a little bit
Pop,
quicker.
Pop was back earlier than expected as well.
Well, you know what you do is you say they're going to be out longer. And
I know what they do. I'm just saying that based on the projection.
Yes.
And based on what was reality, it was...
Hold on, Drew, do you have like a conspiracy theory? Like, what's going on?
It's not a conspiracy theory, but it's clear that, I mean, this isn't a Jets thing. This is an all-teams thing. They say a player is going to be out for they always err on the side of being longer rather than shorter, because that's just logical.
And because they don't want people like us asking questions every 5 minutes when it gets close to that time. So if they can interject that information randomly, you know, a week, two before, it also allows them to change narratives.
There you go. Look at you, Dave, with all the narrative changing. What's your narrative?
I don't know.
We have to figure out Dave's narrative. That might be the goal for the rest of the show. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's final night in town. He's been playing for sold out shows all week long. Lars Kalju in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. So the Jets defense is getting a little bit healthier. We know Nate Boley is going to be out at least, you know, till after the All-Star break. No expectation he'll be back in the next six games or so. But with Kulikov back and with Niku called up, we thought that the free Niku movement had arrived, but it was a very short-lived movement as he was out of the lineup again on Thursday against Boston.
3-0 with him in it.
So I guess my question is twofold. One, your thoughts on bringing him back for the game, the quick games, the two games against Montreal and Toronto, then having him back out of the lineup against Boston, and then what's your top six? What's your Jets' top six defense with Kulikov and with Niku available to the team?
Yeah, Buzz, I think most people are going to agree.
Buzz?
Aldrin.
Oh. Yeah. Because you've got the NASA sweatshirt, so I'm going to call you Buzz. So obviously, everyone's going to put Sammy.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, Izzy. I thought you had a bit of a moment there. I was like, then it clicked in 1 second later.
Yeah, we'll move on here. But obviously, you know, I think Dave is going to agree with this that, you know, ideally, Sammy Niku is in your top six. And I think we were surprised that he wasn't in the lineup against Minnesota, right? Because last Saturday, we were talking about, you know, finally Sammy Niku is going to be freed to start off the road trip. And as you mentioned, Drew.
Yeah, we thought he was going to be freed against Minnesota.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you talk about, you know, the last game against Boston, you know, Dmitry Kulikov comes back, Dave, so somebody has to come out, right? The logical choices were Anthony Boteto, Sammy Niku, and the reasons that Paul Maurice gave made sense. But, and obviously, you know, Paul Maurice, Charlie Huddy, the coaching staff, Jamie Compon, you know, Todd Woodcroft, these guys know way more than we do. But, you know, if we're talking about skill and who the better defenseman is, if it's between Sammy Niku and Anthony Boteto, or if it's between Sammy Niku and Nathan Beaulieu or Carl Dahlstrom, I mean, the answer is going to continue to be Sammy Niku. And I realize that he's had a lot of injury problems. And I realize, Dave, that he's still got some defensive deficiencies. And he threw that little temper tantrum that we know about now, right, during practice. But, of course, he has room to grow. He's only 23 years old. But if we're basing this just on skill, puck moving ability, add a little bit more of an offensive element, then you put Sammy Niku in the lineup. Now, is he going to play tomorrow against Nashville? If I'm a betting man, I would probably say that he does go into the lineup. But having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if Maurice keeps him out of the lineup because he's kept him out of the lineup twice over the last four games, right? But yeah, like how many times can we say this, right? Like we've been talking about this for months now. Obviously, we weren't talking about this when Niku was injured, but you know, having the conversation, you know, is Niku better than, you know, insert one of those three defensemen? Mm-hmm. And obviously, Beaulieu's injured right now. But yeah, it makes more sense to me to have Nyku in the lineup just because he's more skilled than the other defensemen that you have available. I get the fact that Beteto's been, you know, a player that you put out there on the penalty kill, but can Josh Morrissey, Tucker Poolman, Dmitry Kulikov, you know, Lucas Sabiza, can these guys not play on the penalty kill too?
Well, first of all, have you seen the penalty kill? You know, yeah. It's been playing a little bit better as of late, but the
point is, to me, Drew, is that you don't just keep Anthony Beteto in the lineup because he plays on the PK.
I find it to be crazy at this point in time. I mean, it's venturing from the point of easing a player back into your lineup to something where I know that they've done all the good PR this week in making it seem that there's no personal conflict there and everything's hunky dory and the misunderstanding was just that. It wasn't actually a serious incident. But if he's not in the lineup tomorrow against the Predators, I mean, I'm just befuddled at the logic that is going through the decision making at that point in time.
So here's my take. Sami Niku missed a month.
Yes.
From November 27th in Milwaukee in the second period, he got knocked out of the game, and then he played again December 29th for the Moose. Then he played two games. Then he got called up. So if you want to go on the logic, I actually didn't have a problem. I thought he should play in Minnesota, but, you know, holding him out, wanting him to, quote, practice with the team, get up to NHL speed, I actually didn't think missing Minnesota was as big a deal. I thought he could obviously still improve over Sabiza or Beteto.
Right.
But I still it's not cause for concern at that point because you're thinking to yourself, is Sami Niku going to get into the lineup? Of course, he gets in versus Toronto, Montreal, gets in versus Toronto. And you're thinking to yourself, well, what's the problem? Like, you know, sure, he's going to have some hiccups, you know, but you've got a guy who is the AHL Defenseman of the Year as a rookie, only the second rookie ever to win Defenseman of the Year in the AHL. So we know he's a good defenseman at the American Hockey League level. Now, that doesn't make you the number one pairing defenseman in the NHL, but, I mean, the truth is that both he and Tucker Poolman last year looked like guys who should be in the NHL. And, you know, Coach Vincent talked about that, and obviously Sami Niku was in the NHL for 30 games with the Jets last year. But once you've got him up to speed, once you feel confident, like when you recall a guy, if you didn't recall him and want to play him, then the reality is the Moosehead games, you could have played him in those games and got him, quote, more up to game speed if you needed to. But again, missing the Minnesota game isn't as big a deal. But you get Kulikov into the lineup. And I agree that Kulikov is better than Sabiza and better than Beteto. So you've got a guy like Kulikov in. Why wouldn't you just have Sami Niku? And then you've got Morrissey, Poolman, Pionk, Kulikov, Niku, and one of Sabiza or Beteto.
Look, I agree with what you just said, Dave. And then the added layer of this decision that leaves me so questioned is that you have Kulikov playing on the right side against the Boston Bruins on Thursday night. You have too many left shot defensemen.
Yeah.
Niku, a left shot defenseman, prefers to play the right side.
Yeah. Kulikov has played on the right side.
But why don't you just go cool? I mean, your left side defense could be Morrissey, Spezza, Kulikov. Three guys who are all left side defensemen.
Right.
And then your right side defense is Poolman, Pionk, and Niku. Three guys who prefer to play the right side.
Mm-hmm.
You're just adding what benefit is there to keeping Sami Niku? If you don't think he's a regular member of your top six, that's the message you're sending by not playing him on Thursday night against the Boston Bruins.
Well, there's a big problem there, and we've talked about this in years past, like whether you're talking about like a Mason Appleton or another player who was with the Moose who gets called up, you don't want them being that quote-unquote seventh, eighth defenseman. You don't want them being that 13th forward, right? Like the old Marco Dano spot.
Right.
Like a guy like Mason Appleton, for his development, he's got to play games. Like he's not a veteran that just can't crack the lineup, right? Like he's not that type of player. So when you're talking about Niku, like that's why I really strongly believe, and you know, I obviously have no insider knowledge. Paul Maurice doesn't accept my texts. But when you talk about, you know,
I don't accept your texts.
Exactly. But when you talk about tomorrow's game, it just makes so much sense to get him back. Because, you know, when you talk about the game on Wednesday that he played, do you want him to go, what would it be? If he doesn't play against Nashville but plays against Vancouver, that would be what, Dave? 6 days?
6 days
without
games.
A game? So that's a week. So I don't think you want him, you know, like, I'm not saying that Niku would be bad if he didn't play against Nashville but played against Vancouver. But
if you don't play Niku against Nashville, sorry, Ez. If you don't play Niku on tomorrow against Nashville, you're telling him that he's your seventh defenseman. That's what you're telling him. You're telling him that Anthony Beteto is...
I wouldn't disagree with that because... know, quite simply, when the Jets acquired Anthony Betedo, I don't think, and by the way, I don't want to pile on Betedo because, you know, and I'm not the only one that said this, like Dennis has said this, Paul said this, like on the broadcast, like this might be Betedo's best hockey of his career because Betedo is a journeyman defenseman. Like, let's be honest, like he is a guy that's never been a top four guy. He's always been like a third pairing kind of guy that, you know, comes in when there's an injury. But he's filled a nice role. But again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, and the Free Nicku movement is going to love this because I'm part of it. But when you have a guy, as Dave talked about, the pedigree, the upside, the AHL defenseman of the year, I mean, the guy that can skate like that, can move the puck, who's got that offensive upside, quite simply, he's more talented than Betedo, and you got to get him into the lineup if you've got him up with the big club.
There's no question about it. You have to put out your most talented lineup. And sure, I know that NHL coaches hate players that they do not have consistency with, and that they might on occasion make a play that leaves you scratching your head or leaves you a little, you know, wondering why they did that. But you have to let a young player sort of play through that to some degree. Sammy Nicku has nothing else to prove at the AHL level. You need him to play NHL games to really understand what you have. I believe you have a defenseman in Sammy Nicku that's better than Anthony Betedo. Well, I think most people would believe that. It's time to let him be that defenseman and not be bouncing in and out of the lineup.
And this is also, you know, he's going to be an RFA next season.
Yes.
And there was talk going into the summer.
And there was talk that he was going to be demanding a trade getting called up soon.
You know, but I the truth is, in today's NHL,
yeah,
I would say probably like 100 player. Like it seems like the percentage of players that have requested or proposed that is high. So I really put no stock in that. That seems like leverage than more than anything.
Sure.
Because for a guy who doesn't have really any leverage at this point in his career. But the fact is that, to your point, Drew, you want to be able to know exactly what you have. You know what you have of him at the AHL level.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, like, and people harp on Nicku being an emotional player and being like, you know, body language. And don't get me wrong, you can see it, but it's not ever team directed. It's always at himself. And it's something that he's worked on. But it is. Sometimes you see it in the game. He makes a mistake and his whole demeanor shifts. He just like, his shoulders kind of like
sag,
and yeah. You say, and you can just kind of see that, and then eventually he works through it, and he'll get out of it right away. You can't do that kind of stuff at the NHL level.
Well, how many times did Patrick Laine say last year, or the last 2 years, that he's not very good at hockey? And what do? We all laugh about it because we know it's not true.
Right.
So to penalize a player
is good at hockey. Yeah,
to penalize a player for having bad body language to me is not something acceptable.
And I agree. And again, what we're ultimately pointing towards is the idea that here's a young player who has an immeasurable amount of talent,
mm-hmm,
that could help your defense out because, you know, breakouts, you know, controlling the puck. Skate the puck out of your zone. This is a guy who can do all of those things. And, you know, the truth is you also want to let him go a little bit. You want to give him the horse a little bit of a rein because you don't want to be reining him in and trying to change him from what he is. So
he has to play games.
If you want to keep your defense fresh and you want to sub in Anthony Betedo and Lucas Sabiza,
that's right,
back and forth in and out of your lineup, who cares? They're both on 1 year deals. They're both filling a role for your team. There's no downside to doing that. You're not hurting your team. But to keep Nicku bouncing in and out or keeping him out of the lineup doesn't make any sense.
Who knew Drew Mindell was the head of the Free Nicku movement?
When we come back, Trevor Kidd is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. More Jets talk to come on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio, 1290. The Jets and the Nashville Predators tomorrow afternoon, a key Central Division matchup. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Trevor Kidd. You know Trevor, of course, as a Jets analyst here on the station. Trevor, good morning. Happy New Year to you. How are things?
Good morning, happy new year, and you'd never get used to minus 30-ish weather, ever.
It is a little frigid out there. I would agree with you in that front. So you're not on a lake ice fishing right now or anything?
No, there's a line in the sand even in regards to that, and No, I'm not. Not today, anyways. And yeah, it's you know, it's crazy. Just walking around downtown, I was around the convention center and just sitting and waiting at a light yesterday on the sidewalk. And you know, there's an elderly couple that was beside me, and I looked at them. I said, "You never get used to this stuff, do you?" And we both, all three of us, kind of laughed at it. And yeah, no, you got to love Winnipeg. You got to love Manitoba. And certainly got to love it at this time of year. If you're going to spend time here on a regular basis, I am one of those. I love winters. I do lots of things in the winters, but I'm not on the lake today, that's for sure.
It certainly makes us a hardier sort. Trevor obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. A 2-1-1 road trip concluded on Thursday night against the Boston Bruins. The team obviously flew home after the game, you know, 5 out of a possible 8 points. And you look at that on paper and you say, okay, 5 out of 8, that's not bad. But on that plane, they had to be thinking, you know, what could have been, if not for, you know, a couple minutes here, a couple minutes there, 6, 7, 8 points might have been in their grasp at some point in time.
No, for sure. You know, what I could have, should have. And I agree with you guys. I mean, it was a lot of fun over the holidays there. Obviously, I sat in the road shotgun with Paulie Adams and with the team on a more daily basis. And I tell you guys, like, it was a lot of fun, not only just being involved with the team, but I tell you, you honestly lose what day of the week it is. And there is a part there in that road trip, even myself, if you would ask me, is it Wednesday or Saturday, I wouldn't have been able to tell you, because you simply get into the groove. Is it a non-game day or is it a game day? Are we looking forward to the next game or looking forward to the next opportunity? And I tell you, the switch, what I'm getting to here, is the switch from game to game is almost immediate. And I agree with you that, yes, hey, listen, you look at that road trip and it could have been an extremely successful road trip. But going into it, if you would have said that the Winnipeg Jets, kind of with this roller coaster ups and downs that they're having here at the moment, that they would have taken 5 out of a possible 8, I probably would have said no way, and I'll take the other side of that. And so to me, yes, they possibly could have had 7, certainly maybe kicking themselves for a few minutes in that dressing room afterwards. But I tell you, I would say by the time the plane landed in Winnipeg, they were already setting the preparations for Nashville tomorrow afternoon.
Trev, I heard you on Thursday on the Don Vito roundtable with KO talking about Sammy Niku, and obviously, you know, he plays 2 of the 4 games on the road trip, but, you know, with all due respect to Anthony Boteto, right now, you know, don't you have to have Sammy Niku in your top 6?
Guys, this is, I mean, big picture, yeah, I agree, 110%. And, you know, I mentioned the time that I spent, you know, over the holidays, and to me, one of the biggest things when, you know, analyzing and being more involved with these teams and talking about the opposition a lot more, you know, let's look at the Leafs. They got Riley, they got Barry. Look at the Blues, played them twice around the holidays. Petrangelo, Colorado Avalanche, Kale McCarr. Like, they have, each team has absolute difference makers in regards to D-man doing things in the offensive zone. And so when you look at the Winnipeg Jets, you know, you'd probably make an argument that Neil Pionk is that guy right now at the moment. But Neil Pionk still isn't playing below the top of the circles. Neil Pionk is being a difference maker or a factor here on the back end in regards to the offensive zone simply by, to me, a better job of finding shooting lanes, specifically on the power play and getting pucks to the net. To me, that's been a big thing in the power play, being a lot more dangerous here over the last you know, month or so. But the Winnipeg Jets, think of the guys they lost, right? Bufflin is not in the fold. Myers, Trouba, even a Ben Sherratt. You think back to the last few seasons. How many times did you see those guys below the top of the circles? Below, even, let's say, the goal line, creating offense, a part of the cycle. And so when you talk about the cycle in the offensive zone, a lot of times it's just the 3-4. It's interchanging, moving that, you know, support triangle from one side of the ice to the other. You seldom, in my opinion, see the D-man for the Winnipeg Jets engaged in that cycle. Whereas I mentioned those teams that I just spoke about, the, you know, the Kale McCarrs and Petrangelos and Rileys and Berries. Like, this is a four-person cycle, and sometimes a five if you look at Riley and Barry with the Leafs. So long answer here, I apologize. But to me, yes, Sammy Niku at some point in time has the potential to be one of those guys, 110%. Right now, listen, and everybody's spoken about, guys, what's been one of the Achilles heels for the Winnipeg Jets at this point? It's their penalty kill. 110%, it's their penalty kill. Everybody's talking about it last week. There's been components to it that have been good. I mean, November was fairly good, then it dips off, and now over the last few games, perhaps they're trying to, you know, they're closer to it being more successful than not. But, you know, and a part of that to me is, yes, Andrew Kopp has stepped back in. He's been a huge difference maker. But Betetto is a huge part of the penalty kill at the moment. So to me, that is, I think, arguably more important big picture for the Winnipeg Jets, the penalty kill versus the creating the offense part with Sammy Niku stepping into the lineup over Betetto. That's a long answer. Hopefully that makes sense, but that's my view on it.
You know, Trev, we got to talk about Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, he has obviously been the Jets' MVP all season long. You know, a lot of guys have looked at goaltenders over the, you know, the Stanley guys who have gone to the Stanley Cup, and a lot of times they've played under 60 games. Connor Hellebuyck played 67 2 years ago, 63 last year. He's on pace to finish somewhere in the 60s again this year. Now, so you got to weigh the balance, right? Hellebuyck, when he talks about it, he says he's a rhythm goalie. Obviously, all about getting into those game actions. So how do you, as a coach, say to a goaltender who likes to play a lot of games, you know, we got to hold you back, or do you just let him do what is natural to him, which is play quite a bit?
Well, and I'd also throw in here a little bit right now, Laurent Bessois needs to be better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a factor in this. You think back to, last year, even a couple of years ago, you need your number two guy to step in and be a difference maker and win hockey games. And so to me, a part of when you're talking about Connor Hellebuck's, you know, role this year and maybe playing more games than Coach Maurice would like, I think, I don't know if Coach Maurice or anybody would go on the record in regards to this, but to me, Laurent Bressois is a factor in this conversation because he hasn't gone in there and necessarily stole hockey games. And, you know, we can talk about Connor Hellebuyck and the year that he's having in MVP and perhaps up for another Vezina or at least be a candidate. He's been rock solid. He's been a difference maker in so many games, a reason why the Winnipeg Jets might come away with 2 points in a hockey game. And we haven't seen that necessarily from the number two guy on a consistent basis. So now let's factor in, and Coach Maurice mentioned this many times over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And once you get into the month of January, we're talking about playoff-type games every single game. Guys, we're at the beginning of January, and the coaching staff is talking about each and every game being a playoff game. So now how do you factor in getting this guy rest, trying to fit in the number two? If the points are that massive and that huge in January, how do you not play your number one goaltender who is rock solid, is arguably the MVP of the team, is up for, at this point in time, one of the Vezina-type guys? So, you have to ride him. And so give or take 5 games, if you had intentions of going into the season and playing this guy 55 or at least keeping it under 60, but realizing the way the season is and the struggles and the ups and downs of the team and your goaltender is the main point and you guys staying above water or the high water mark here, to me, you throw a little bit of that out the window, at least the intentions you might have had in training camp or early in the season to try and, maybe play this guy a little bit less or have him a little bit more fresh for playoffs. Listen, let's get to the playoffs and then we'll talk about fresh or getting some rest or in between time, right? So, and again, I go back to what I started with. I think if Connor Hellebuyck wants to play less games, Laurent Bressois is going to have to step up a little bit more. He's played good, but we see the level that Connor Hellebuyck has had to play at in order for the Jets to be successful. Laurent Bressois is going to have to do the same.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Trevor, of course, you know, as an analyst here on TSN 1290, the Jets and the Predators tomorrow afternoon, a game you can hear on this fine radio station. Trevor, you know, Andrew Kopp, of course, we know the impact that he has on this team and particularly on the penalty kill. You know, are you surprised that he is as impactful as he has been this season when he's been in the lineup?
Yeah, I would say there's a little bit of a surprise in that. I mean, to me, his trajectory and you know, being a Winnipeg Jet has been similar to that of Josh Morrissey. I mean, Josh Morrissey stepped in a few years ago, and I mean, he's been shooting for the moon ever since, and to a somewhat of a lesser degree. But you could probably say the same about Andrew Kopp. I mean, stepping in, being a fourth line player, moving up to the third, and now we're seeing him have impacts on the second line with Blake Lear. So not surprised. I mean, he has a creativity to him that we're starting to see, but he plays hard. He skates hard. He plays hard. His routes are right. I think one of the reasons why you've even seen Matthew Perreault at times move up to that second line is he's a hard-nosed player. And when I say hard-nosed player, he'll get into it, mix it up along the wall. He'll win those battles along the wall, but he's not a guy that's afraid to take the puck and get into the middle part of the ice, the hard parts of the ice, and play in those areas. So, you know, and we've seen that with Roslovic, right? Some of the reasons why he might get moved down to that third line, and we've seen that here over the last couple of games, is one thing that Roslovic perhaps struggles with at times, is the consistency of that. And I think Andrew Kopp, in just learning and becoming a better pro, is really consistent in that regard. His game is really consistent in how he likes to play, how he brings a 200-foot game to the table. So, no, he's been, you know, first and foremost, you know, the PK part of it, he's huge, right? In the way the Jets struggles, Andrew Kopp stepping back in and helping out the PK is certainly huge for the Winnipeg Jets, but his impact 5-on-5 cannot go unnoticed or not talked about for sure.
Trev, last question for you. We wanted to ask you about 3-on-3 overtime. We're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show. And, you know, obviously the game Wednesday night between the Jets and the Leafs, you know, everybody is still talking about that 3-on-3. And then obviously, you know, the shootout, Line A having that beautiful shot. And,
right.
then Wheeler obviously winning it in the shootout. But, you know, as a former NHL goaltender, you know, you hear that, you know, the owners and the general managers have pitched to the NHLPA about extending 3-on-3 overtime to either, you know, 7 minutes or 10 minutes and scrapping the shootout. But you hear that the NHLPA and the players are not interested in doing that because of maybe the wear and tear and, you know, the fatigue that it would put on the players. But as a former player, what's your take on, you know, possibly extending 3-on-3 overtime? Is it fair to do that to the goalies? Is it fair to do that to, you know, the quote unquote high skilled guys that are going to be out there for 3-on-3? Like, what's your take? Is this something that can be done?
Boy, it's a fine line, guys, because I mean, as a fan, it's hugely, hugely entertaining. And no matter what you, how you look at this, break it down, yeah, it's a sport, but we're in the entertainment business, right? I mean, that's what puts fans in the seats on a lot of nights. So it's, I can see the argument from both sides. I mean, you talk about the wear and tear. To me, you're talking, you know, let's take away 80% of the players because there's only a few that play in those overtimes.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the wear and tear on your superstars. And that's the conversation there when you talk about wear and tear. Because, again, I mentioned, most teams rotate basically six guys, if that, through a five-minute overtime period. You know what? Is it another minute or two? To me, I like the way it is right now. Just keeping it at 5 minutes. To me, there, you know, some of the conversation about eliminating the shootout part of it. I would engage in that conversation a little bit more than the 3-on-3 component. I think you'd maybe see a little bit more put into, you know, a game towards the end of regulation, or even perhaps, not that, you know, teams are playing any sort of defense, but you might see a little bit more urgency for 2 points if there was also basically no points on the line, right? So I would engage or have more fun with the conversation of eliminating the shootout portion versus adding more time to the three-on-three portion.
Trevor Kidd is a TSN radio analyst here in Winnipeg. Trevor, thanks so much for your time and insight. We'll see you this week at the rink, buddy.
Absolutely. Stay warm, fellas.
Likewise, Trevor. Thanks again for joining us. When we come back, we talk about tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Predators game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Well, first we'll go to the bench again. Rene will try. Rene going deep for the empty net. It is bouncing!
From Thursday night, Pekka Rinne into the empty net against the Chicago Blackhawks. You thought the Jets are going to have to worry about him as a goaltender. Now they have to worry about him as an offensive threat. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Predators tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock on this fine radio station.
Seems like every Jets game on the weekend now is an afternoon game. Yeah, like, we've had the two Wild games, and we've had, you know, yeah, what was the other game that was the afternoon game? We had another one there in December, I forget.
I don't remember. St. Louis was an afternoon game, wasn't it? Wasn't it on a Sunday afternoon?
There was a 4 o'clock game.
Yeah, wasn't that St. Louis? I can't keep track. I don't know. The Jets schedule, the home schedule particularly sucked this year. Is what it, you know, there were so few, you know, Friday night, Saturday night home games that you fans have to wonder, you know, too many afternoon games is what I'm getting at.
Or maybe the Philly game? Was the Philly game a late afternoon game?
I think the Philly game was four.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, it's hard to keep track. I know most of them have been the afternoon, that's for sure. Tomorrow afternoon's game, 1 o'clock, like I said, against the Preds. A lot of similarities to last Saturday's game in Minnesota in that the Jets, you know, they have that 5-point lead on the Predators right now. Granted, the Predators still have two games in hand, but the Jets have to be looking at this game tomorrow afternoon and say, look, a clean 2 points on home ice, all of a sudden there's another 7 points between us and the Predators now. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get those clean 2 points, if the Preds get a clean 2 points, it's down to a 3-point lead. This is what the proverbial 4-point game. Just like last Saturday's game in Minnesota was so important, tomorrow afternoon's game against the Predators is equally important. And this is a Predators team. We know now, of course, new head coach with John Hines behind the bench and Peter Laviolette having been dismissed of his duties earlier this week.
Yeah, and obviously Pekka Rinne is a goal scorer now. So, no, but when you're talking about Nashville, I mean, maybe you're going to see this rivalry renewed a little bit, right? Because, you know, going back, you know, a couple of years, even last year, even though, you know, you didn't see the Jets and Preds, Dave, play in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been a pretty good rivalry with, you know, the Jets always kind of wanting to usurp the Preds as one of those top divisions in this, top teams in the Central, right? But, I mean, like, you talk about, you know, 5 points back, the Predators being 5 points back, like, they have a pretty big mountain to climb here. Like, I wouldn't count them out. Like, even though a month ago I said don't count San Jose out, even though you can count the Sharks out now, especially without Logan Couture. But
the reality is San Jose is going on an incredible run and winning the Stanley Cup now.
Well, I mean,
they got the kiss of death. I'll say this much.
Bump. If there is any team.
It's not San Jose. They're not going to do it. Have you seen their goaltending? Stop talking right
now. Well, I mean, sure. If Martin Jones starts to make a few more saves.
Talk about the Predators.
Yeah, the Predators, obviously, the 5-2 win was a big win because John Hines comes in. He basically had, 4 or 5 hours to get ready for that game. I think it was against Boston, right?
Yeah, which they lost on home ice.
Yeah, and they lost big. Like, it wasn't close, right?
Not close.
So obviously, you know, getting that win against Chicago is big, but you know that they're going to want to follow that up. So yeah, this is a big game, but you got guys, unless the Jets separate themselves from the rest of the pack, pretty much all of the games from here on in, from here until early April, they're going to be big games, right? Like, the Jets aren't in a position like a Washington or a St. Louis. Like, they're not leading their division. So they're all going to be big games. Like, you know, when you talk about the game against Vancouver on Tuesday, Vancouver's still fighting for a playoff spot, right?
Two points behind the Jets.
They're better than they were last year. And I realize, you know, you've got some injuries there. But you don't want to take them lightly. And then you've got Tampa Bay, who, you know, quietly has moved into second in the Atlantic, right? So we talked about it earlier.
Winners of nine straight.
Yeah. You've had a couple.
And blowing teams out.
Well, I mean, did anybody actually think the Lightning were going to miss the playoffs?
No. That's why when people were talking about potentially firing Cooper, I was like, first of all, and we had talked about it, these guys had so many games in hand. So you knew that Tampa Bay, because of their trip overseas, were going to eventually get
it back. It was a slow start. And again, you knew they were going to get going, and they are going
now. If you're the Lightning, this is not a bad thing. You had a, quote, little bit of controversy, and now you're cruising into a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. People are still kind of disregarding you.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, exactly where you want to be.
It's a big week for the Jets.
The only problem is Tampa Bay could face Toronto in the first round.
That's true.
That's the
but Toronto can't play that kind of hockey.
I'm saying that's a bad thing for Toronto.
No, I know, because
not Tampa.
No, I know, because I was going to say Toronto can't play. I mean, Tampa does it a little bit too with the, I think they've tightened it up a little bit. We don't obviously watch them very much, but you know, knowing Toronto can't, I don't think, play that style in the playoffs and have a lot of success. So we'll see what happens with them. But tomorrow
afternoon, it's the Predators, and the Jets need to start playing better on home ice. And a key Central Division matchup. They've been good in the Central Division, and that's part of the reason they're still in a playoff spot at this point in the season is how well they've played in their in-division matchups. Tomorrow afternoon against the Predators is another key one after last Saturday in Minnesota where they got the 1 point. You know the Jets are going to be looking for the clean two to really sort of put another kick down the Predators a little bit further down in the Central Division standings and the Western Conference playoff race. When we come back, Willie Donick, Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcast, is going to join us. We'll talk about the coaching change. We'll talk about the Predators as they look to get back in the playoff race in the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, trying to get a hold of Willie Donick to talk about the Nashville Predators. They're going to be in town tomorrow afternoon. They're flying in later tonight. They'll be in town tomorrow afternoon to face the Jets at Bell MTS Place, a crucial Central Division matchup between these two rivals. The Predators obviously dismissing Peter Laviolette as head coach and hiring John Hines earlier this week. My favorite thing from earlier, I think it was last Saturday on one of the broadcasts, they're, you know, oh, the Predators aren't going to be firing Peter Laviolette. He's safe. You don't need to worry about it. He's okay. And then Monday, they fired him.
Well, I think the main reason for that, you know the main reason, right? The Predators have only had three head coaches in their history, right? So you're talking about Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette. So we know that David Poile is a real loyal guy. So that's, I think, why a lot of people didn't think that they were going to fire Laviolette.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our number one Vanderbilt fan, Willie Donick, joins us on the program. You know Willie, of course, as the play-by-play broadcaster for the Nashville Predators. Willie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. I hope you brought your winter coat to Winnipeg.
Well, we have not lifted off yet, but I...
you might want to just turn around.
Temperatures. Yes, and I...
So yeah, Willie, just stay in Nashville.
Chicago.
Sorry.
Yeah. Willie, obviously brought you on to talk about a crucial Central Division matchup tomorrow afternoon between the Jets and the Preds. The Predators going through a bit of a tumultuous week with the dismissal of Peter Laviolette, John Hines behind the bench. Only been really those two games. In that first game, you can almost put an asterisk next to it given how soon it was after he was announced as head coach. But what do you think that John Hines is going to bring to the table that's different from Peter Laviolette? Is it as simple as a different voice, or do you think he's going to make some tactical changes to how they approach the game?
Well, he's definitely making some tactical changes. I think that's why he was brought in. So I think it's both reasons that you said. I think it is a different voice, a shakeup, and that is very uncommon. It's the first time in the franchise's history that they've ever changed coaches in the middle of the season. It was the exact halfway point. But David Poile was kind of just exasperated, thinks there's a lot more to this team than they've showed, and so he felt like he needed to make a change. But the other part of that is I think they would like to make a change in how they play, you know, just some tactical things on how they cover people in the defensive zone, how they break out of the offensive zone, just a couple of small philosophical changes. I don't know if I would say radical, because in talking to some of the players, they've all played this type of system before that John Hines is trying to implement, and he's just had literally one practice under his belt. The second practice is going on, is about to start here in the next 30 minutes before the team lifts off and flies to Winnipeg. So he's just starting to try to put it in there, but they did do a pretty good job, I think, implementing it for the first game that they tried it in the United Center on Thursday.
Willie, we got to talk about Roman Josi. He gets an assist in the game on Thursday night versus Chicago. His point streak is up to 12 games now. I think he's got 46 points on the season. So he's on track to shatter his previous career high in points, which I believe was 61 points. I mean, we've had you on the show so many times over the years, and we've obviously talked about Josi being the captain and one of the best defensemen in the league, but just how impressive is this latest little run from Josi, just because you just don't see those types of streaks that often from defensemen?
Well, it's been really impressive, and I think he is a great player having maybe his best year, and I think you put that together, and I really hope that he gets strong consideration for the Norris. I know within about a month to 6 weeks of the season, everybody was focused in on John Carlson for the Capitals. And, of course, playing in the East and playing for a high-profile team like Washington, you know, it seems like the narrative gets built. But to me, I don't watch Carlson every night. I'm like you guys. I'm watching more of the games in the West. But if there's a guy playing better than Roman Josi, who's a defenseman, I have not seen it. He is just unbelievable, even for him, what he is doing to generate offense to this point in the season. Now, there's a long way to go. There's almost a half a season. We'll see if the style change, the subtle style changes affect his production. But he has been fantastic on both ends of the ice. It's not just that he's getting the points, it's how he's doing it, just making some great individual moves, making people miss, drawing defenders in, and setting people up for goals or getting goals himself.
You know, Willie, how would you evaluate Matt Duchene's first season in Nashville? I mean, he's got 40 games, 10 goals, 20 assists, which is pretty high for him. So how would you evaluate his first season over in Nashville?
Well, he's been slightly better of late. He's starting to pick up the points. He got off to a good start, then dropped off a little bit, got hurt. And then, like I said, if you look at the last six or seven games, the production has been pretty good. But I think he is one of the guys, and I think there's a group of them, that they think they can get more out of collectively. And it's not just how many goals and assists you have. It's what impact do you have collectively on the game. One of the things that was tossed around a lot as they made the changes in the coaching staff was the best players have to be the best players. So how do they bring out the best in Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg and on down the line? The secondary scoring has been very good, guys. This team is getting the goals. If you'll notice, they're in the top 5, 6, 7, mm-hmm. depending on the day, in goals for per game. They've got to continue that, but they've got to get the goals against down. But I think what's likely to happen is guys like Nick Bonino, Callie Yarncroak, Rocco Grimaldi, guys who have really had nice seasons so far, maybe they'll level off a little bit. But you got to hope that the big guns can get hot and pick up the slack there. So you maintain the goals for, and in the meantime, play better collectively defensively.
Willie Donick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. The Jets and the Predators tomorrow afternoon, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Willie, if the Predators don't get better goaltending from Pekka Rinne and Juuse Saros, does it really matter who their head coach is?
Well, I think that's part of it. I do think, you know, I guess that's the saying that's been tossed around a lot, right? If you get saved, you become a much better coach. And I'm sure that had to factor in here. But I do think that how they play and how they defend in front of the goaltenders will put them in a better position to succeed. That's the theory anyway, that they feel like some changes in how they cover people and maybe a new mentality, a fresh start, can allow them to decrease the quality of what they're giving up. If you look at some of the just the raw numbers, how many shots they take, how many shots they give up, the quantity has been well in the favor of the Predators. But the quality, I think they would like to tweak a little bit. They tend to give up high-quality chances, and that's where maybe they're not getting the great saves that they've gotten in the past to this point of the season from both Pekka Rinne and Juuse Saros. It has been mystifying because that's really never happened before since those guys have been in a Predators uniform. You just don't see their save percentages under 90% and goals against average up over 3. That's just, it's still odd every time you look at the score sheet on game day. But I think they believe in both of those guys and that the law of averages says that they're due to come around some and have a good second half. And if that's the case, then things hopefully can fall into place and they can get back into position to get into the playoffs.
Willie, sticking with the goaltending, I can't believe it's taken this long, but we got to talk about that goal Thursday night that Pekka Rinne scores. There's only a handful of goalies who've shot the puck and scored a goal into an empty net, and you've covered the Predators for a long time. Based on the way Pekka Rinne handles the puck, it's actually surprising to me that he hasn't scored a goal already, but what was that like to call it? And obviously, you know, a very special moment for Rinne just to join that elite club of goalies that have scored a goal.
Oh, really exciting. I'll tell you what, and it was really exciting for me to be sitting next to Chris Mason, who's been, you know, of course you guys know him, a classy guy, a guy who's been credited with a goal before, although he didn't shoot it in. But now the Predators, it's kind of cool, are the only team ever to have two different goalies be credited with a goal. But Chris Mason just went nuts when that puck was going in. Pekka has tried that a couple of times. One time in particular, he shot it, and we thought it had a chance. And the guy on the other team, I can't remember who they're playing. I think it might have been St. Louis. But a guy made a great play and just sort of almost like he had a lacrosse stick, sticked it up and caught the puck with his stick. And so you know, you'll never know if it had a chance to go in or not. That's the closest he's come before. But the way he launched that thing, once it got over Kirby Dach, who was kind of hanging out on the far blue line, and it started bouncing, he got a good first bounce. And then you kind of had a feeling it was going in. So that was a very special moment. I can't tell you how crazy it's been the last 24 or however long it's been now, going on close to 48 hours. Just the residuals of how many times that clip has been shown over and over, and people still are excited about it.
Are you getting royalties for it?
Unfortunately not, but it is kind of funny to see how many times that thing just gets played on a loop.
You know, Willie, one of the other moves that the Predators made was they let go assistant coach Kevin McCarthy, and they named Rob Scuderi as an assistant coach for the Predators. He was the, defensive development coach previously. So what are they hoping? This is his first time on the bench. What are they hoping to get out of him?
Well, first, let me say, because I know Kevin McCarthy, a lot of people are very familiar with him up there. That's where his old stomping grounds is. Kevin McCarthy and Peter Laviolette are first-class guys. I mean, those guys have been through a ton together. I mean, Kevin McCarthy has been Peter Laviolette's right-hand man for years and years at all of the stops, and they have been extremely successful. The more they get removed from their time in Nashville, I think the better and better their resume is going to look. They have had unprecedented success behind the bench for the Predators. And so someday, I think they will probably get their just due here. So I think they're going to go on somewhere else at some point. I don't know if it would be next year, the year after, later this year. Who knows? But I think somebody would be wise to look at that combo again and just look at their resume, and I think they'll start something up somewhere and be very successful. But that being said, I think the idea with Rob Scuderi, who's never been behind the bench before, is a guy that is, I guess, closer removed to having played, and maybe just a good sounding board for some of the guys. I think he's learning as he goes what his role is going to be. But I think they looked at the staff and they wanted somebody with that former player profile, you know, somebody who's played a lot of games in the league that maybe can relate to the players a little bit younger. And so I think that's his role right now. And some of the specifics, I think they'll work out as they go here.
Last question for you, Willie. Willie Donick, Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. It was 10 days ago that the Winter Classic happened in Dallas, the Stars and the Predators, obviously. You know, from your perspective, you know, we watched the game, but what was the experience like being in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas and all the surrounding hoopla around it?
Well, it was amazing. It was incredible. Nashville has never played in any kind of outdoor game before. The Cotton Bowl, just the way it was laid out. I mean, this is a football building that was built in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last thing they were thinking about when they built it, obviously, was anything that had to do with anything other than football, especially hockey.
Yeah.
And so you think about what they did there. But it just, the way it was laid out was perfect, I thought, for being able to see. You know, sitting in the upper deck of the Cotton Bowl was a great view of the ice. The second deck kind of came out towards the rink a little bit more, so you weren't as far back as you were, I think, in some of the outdoor venues. So the sound really stayed in there. So when either team scored, it exploded. And the Predators scored too early, and they had about 20,000, 25,000 fans there. And so you could really hear them. It was awesome. And then, of course, when the Stars made the comeback, the place really exploded because they had more fans. And so it was just a fantastic back and forth. It, you know, from the Predators' perspective, having the experience was one thing. That was great. The only thing that spoiled it, of course, was they couldn't hang on to the lead. And in the process, they lost Ryan Ellis to the cheap shot from Corey Perry, and he's still out. And so, you know, they paid a big price there. And you can probably look back and say that might have been the game that started spiraling that meant the end for Peter Laviolette. I hate to say it, you know, but it was the word that David Poile used for that game was devastating. So that was his word. So, and you kind of felt that going out, just the way it went down, because you had a great opportunity to win.
Willie, while we have you on, is there anything, you know, new when it comes to Ryan Ellis? I know that he's on injured reserve, but is there anything new that you can report, or is it still just he's out indefinitely?
Well, you know, you saw the hit. So I think, but they've been trying to get along here the last couple of games. They've missed now four games without Ryan Ellis and Dante Fabbro, who played a great game in the Winter Classic, trying to fill in for Ryan Ellis. So they've been without two of their top four defensemen during this last stretch, and that certainly didn't help Peter Laviolette in the final days either. But we'll see that they're about to take the ice here in the next 30 minutes. We might get a little closer sense on whether they'll have either one of those guys on this trip. And, of course, the next thing would be, do they get on the plane to head to Winnipeg? It's two games on the road, Winnipeg, and then we will head to Edmonton. Then there are two home games before the All-Star break. So that's what they're looking at. So I don't know if they'll have either one. I do know that they've been kind of watching. They actually sat on the bench and watched practice the other day just so they can help get familiarized with the tweaks they're making to the system under John Hines. So we'll wait and see. You know, I think anything they get before the All-Star break from Ryan Ellis would be a bonus. I think I get the sense that Fabbro is getting close too, but it's just hard to tell.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. He'll be in town tomorrow afternoon to call the Jets and the Predators from Bell MTS Place. Coverage of the game all morning long here on the station. Puck drop, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Willie, thanks so much for joining us. Travel safe to Winnipeg. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Willie. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Connor Hellebuck and his workload. Are the Jets at risk of using their number one goalie too much? Do they need more from Laurent Brossoit? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I like my game. You know, we won. Two goals against. I mean, obviously I won 0, but I liked everything about it, and I liked the guys in front of me making it easy.
Ben shot a little, gained some zips. Into your
He definitely did something, because he definitely didn't score on me in practice last year. I don't know. You know what? It was a pretty good shot by him. I'll give him that.
That was after Monday night's game in Montreal. Connor Hellebuck talking about his performance, talking about the sniper, Ben Sherratt, who, of course, got two goals past him, something he didn't do in practice last year, according to Hellebuck. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Connor Hellebuck, gentlemen, has certainly been the workhorse in net for the Winnipeg Jets. We know how important he's been to the team so far this year, the MVP of the team thus far. Are the Jets at risk of burning out Connor Hellebuck given the amount of games he's played this season? The most in the NHL among a goalie with 37. Started the second most games, 35, tied with Freddie Anderson, one behind Carey Price. Laurent Brossoit only started 10 games this season. Are the Jets at risk of burning out Connor Hellebuck?
Yeah, and we were talking about this the same time last year, right? And, you know, Dave mentioned this to Trevor Kidd. He asked him about this, like, we expected Hellebuck to be around 60 games, but I think he's on pace for something like 65 or 66, right? And yeah. And you'll start to see that come down a little bit, guys, like depending on, you know, where the Jets are at in the standings, like, but I don't think anybody's expecting, you know, the rest of the season to be easy. So the Jets are going to be in a dogfight for a playoff spot. Like you're looking at, you know, second, third, fourth in the Central, wild card, like that is what's in front of the Jets. I mean, they'd have to go on a miraculous run to catch the Blues, right? I think we'd all agree with that. Yeah, so I mean,
a non-starter in my books.
Right. And so what I'm getting to here, guys, is that Hellebuck's going to play a lot of games. Like if you're looking at, you know, 4 or 5 game blocks, let's look at 5 game blocks. Like he's most likely going to start 4 or 5 games, 3 or 4, that type of thing, right? Like he's going to start 7 or 8 of 10.
The Jets have 5 back-to-backs left this season. Mm-hmm. Of those back-to-backs, 2 of those 5 back-to-backs are actually home games where there's no travel involved. They play on a Friday at home and then they play on a Saturday at home. They play on a Saturday at home, then they play on a Sunday at home. So the schedule in terms of obvious opportunities for Laurent Brossoit to get additional starts is not apparent. I mean, you assume that he's going to start, that Brossoit is going to start those back-to-backs, you know, that he's going to start, you know, the second half of those back-to-backs.
Yeah,
that's 5 games.
Right, next week you've got Carolina, Columbus on the road back-to-back. Right. I agree. He'll start one of those games.
He'll start the Wednesday game in Columbus. There's no question on that one. That one's a no-brainer, I think.
Right, and, you know, I would maybe throw this in there. Obviously, Hellebuck is expected to get the start tomorrow afternoon versus Nashville, and I would expect him to start against Vancouver and Tampa Bay, but, you know, maybe Brossoit plays that weekend game. I believe it's a Sunday next weekend against Chicago, right? That starts off that road trip. Mm-hmm. So then maybe you go Brossoit, Hellebuck, Brossoit, because I agree with you. I don't think you want, you know, Brossoit playing 2 games total in the month of January before the All-Star break. So, I think, you know, going back to what we talked about with Kidder, I mean, Brossoit has unfortunately not given the Jets the same level of goaltending as he did last year, right? Guys, like, what was he at one point? He was like 10-1, I remember, or 11-1. Like, mm-hmm. Brossoit was arguably like a top 5 backup in the entire league. I'm not going to say he was the best.
And then his numbers fell off after the All-Star break last year.
But obviously, you know, when the going gets tough, Hellebuck is going to start all the games down the stretch. He's going to be your goalie, you know, in the playoffs. But to your point, Drew, yes, I do think, you know, you hear about load management in other sports like football and all that, but like
basketball more so, but
and basketball, a lot of sports, like it's not something that's unique to one sport, but in hockey, I think it's probably more applicable to the goaltender, mm-hmm. especially like you mentioned it, Freddie Anderson, Carey Price, and Hellebuck. Those are the 3 guys, the only 3 guys really that are playing as much as they're playing. There are other goalies that are playing a lot as well, but I think this is something that Paul Maurice, Wade Flaherty, the coaching staff, they're aware of. It's not like these guys aren't aware of it. I mean, they have to play Hellebuck because he's the best goalie that they have. But I think, to your point, Drew, you don't want Laurent Brossoit just to be the second game of a back-to-back guy.
Can the Jets rely on Brossoit, Dave? I mean, his numbers this year have been, you know, and they're, you know, artificially inflated to some extent by a couple of really bad games. Mm-hmm. The Pittsburgh game, if you recall, you know, at home, that was early in the season, or the Montreal game. I mean, 365 goals against average and an .886 save percentage. Can the Jets play Brossoit, you know, more than they have been and hope to get results?
Well, I mean, I think it's also a testament to the Jets defense last year versus this year. I think that, you know, we oftentimes say goaltender, like that, you know, a goalie is only going to be as good as his defense. Connor Hellebuck is somewhat defying that, I think. But I think ultimately when you look at it, I mean, Trevor Kidd said it, he's a former NHL goaltender. He looks at Laurent Brossoit and he says, this is a guy who has to play better. I mean, as he talked about it, he's talked about it a million times on the show. When you go back and you look at the goaltenders who are winning Stanley Cups, in the last, you know, 10 years, a lot of them are not playing more than 60 games. Mm-hmm. So it's a double-edged sword. At this point, to Kidder's point, and I agree with him, you have to kind of ride the goaltender who you think is going to make it into, help you get into the playoffs, because that's your, I mean, obviously the Stanley Cup is your ultimate goal, but you have to be able to get to the playoffs to actually be able to challenge for it. And I think, you know, it's a couple of things. One, you got to hope that the defense is going to potentially get better. And obviously, you know, there's a big question around Dustin Byfuglien still hanging over the Jets' head like a guillotine right now. You've got Sami Niku, obviously, who could maybe help this group out a little bit. But I just look at it and I think to myself, yeah, it's there's no question Laurent Brossoit has to play better. I mean, you look at, we just talked about the schedule, right? I don't think there's any question Connor Hellebuck probably, unless they want to get Brossoit in on the Canucks game.
Yeah.
And then they go Hellebuck, you know, Hellebuck, Brossoit, Hellebuck. Then you go Hellebuck against Chicago, Brossoit, Hellebuck. Because you don't want, I mean, think about it. After the 22nd against Columbus, the Jets have the All-Star break and their 5-day player break.
Yeah.
So the next game for the Jets won't be till the 31st. So, I mean,
give them a good 10 days off at that point.
That's right. You give Hellebuck a nice rest. You really allow him to recover. He just, you know, doesn't have to worry about it.
There's 37 games left in the Jets season.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those games, how many starts does Brossoit get in those 37 games?
I think you'd like to see somewhere around 10, maybe, you know, maybe 12. I think, you know, that might be a little bit high, but, you know,
definitely. I mean, how many do you think he's going
to
get?
Well, it's tough to say this because he's not playing as much as he was last year, right? So to Dave's point, I mean, you've got 6 games left coming up before the break. You've got 3 at home, 3 on the road. Whether you play him on this homestand or you know he's going to play at least 1 game against Columbus or Carolina, right? Yeah. But I think of the next 6 games, I think you'd like to see Brossoit twice. Mm-hmm. And guys, we're not the coaches, so we don't have to, you know, go over the schedule and pick out which games, you know, Brossoit is going to play. But the point is, he's not playing enough now, and you risk, I think, I don't want to say, I mean, and a guy like Wade Flaherty, Rick St. Croix, these guys get paid to monitor how much these guys are playing, whether they feel ready, like all of that stuff. They look at it at a much deeper level, right? But I think the point is, the Jets, if they get into the playoffs, and most likely, you know, they're not going to be a top seed, so you're going to play like a St. Louis or a Colorado. That's when I think you might be worried if Hellebuck goes into the playoffs and he's played 65 games, 66, 67 games, and you wonder, you know, if he's as fresh, because look at a guy like Tuukka Rask. I was, you know, preparing for the show, looking at his numbers. He's played, I think, 26 games.
Yeah, well, it's basically a timeshare in Boston.
Right? So the Jets don't have a Jaro Halak, right? Like, they don't have a veteran 1B, if you want to call him that, even though, you know, Rask is clearly a better goalie. But, you know, you talked about, you know, if you look at Braden Holtby, if you look at Corey Crawford, you look at Matt Murray, the guys that have won the Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. and obviously that's a very small sample size because you'd have to look at all goalies.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, those guys played somewhere between 45 and 50 games, right? So all I'm saying is, I think you do want to make sure that you're not playing him maybe too much and that he's not going to be fresh come playoff time.
Interestingly, if you want to look at it the opposite way, mm-hmm. when he played 67 games in 2017-18,
yeah.
the Jets went to the Western Conference Finals. Yeah. So, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck talks about being a rhythm goaltender, and part of that is playing, you know, playing quite a bit of hockey. So, I mean, again, if you want to look at it from the other side of it, as opposed to, you know, we're saying, you know, the idea of not burning him out, but when he played the 67 games,
the
Jets were a good team that year.
They were a better team than they are this year.
Correct. But again, it comes down to Connor Hellebuyck being Connor Hellebuyck.
So let me ask you the question. 37 games left. How many starts does Brossoit get in those 37 games?
Well, 10.
You think he gets up that high?
Between 8 and 10, I would think.
Okay. We'll see. And that'll put, you know, give a good workload to both. And if you'd said at the beginning of the year that your backup goaltender is going to get, you know, between 18 and 20 starts, you're probably okay. But the Jets, of course, if they fall out of the playoff race at all, or if they're, you know, fighting tooth and nail, as we think, every game that it's not a Connor Hellebuyck in net will require some deep consideration before making that decision. When we come back, we talk about the Winnipeg Jets as they approach the upcoming trade deadline. What should their strategy be with the trade deadline about 6 or 7 weeks away? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.